storms for me have been survivable because I've viewed them as relational. And I think that the same thing transfers to every season of our life, whether that's Christmas or Easter or summer or grieving or rejoicing or opportunity or failure. These seasons that come in our life, and they are seasons because they have a beginning and they pass in time, they can be survivable if we view them relationally.
I sure did like getting to hug you a few months ago in person. That was so fun.
Incredible. It was a great retreat.
Dr. Alicia Britt Scholey is back on Joe today. Speaker, author, leadership mentor. Alicia and I got to actually be on retreat together, and that's what I'm referring to. You know, I was trying to think about how many times that weekend Alicia saw me cry. And we'd be up into the double digits. I used many Kleenexes that weekend, and we bonded.
That's true. It was a really sweet time. Your authenticity is always there, Lisa. That's what I really respect about you. Just honest through and through.
Well, you know, for me, it was especially sweet because, you know, you're someone that I have admired via your writing for years. I told you that the last time you were on. I told you that in person. And I think, you know, so for me to get to be with you and hear from you, of course, your wisdom was really important for me that weekend, but also just to get to be with a sister in Christ that I just honor and respect and admire. It was really, really special. I have to tell you, there was something I found out about you that I didn't know before the retreat, and that is that you have a fantastic laugh. Now, don't hold it back. I can see you. You know what? I would call it how do you pronounce it? Is that a guffaw? Is that how do you pronounce that? I'm probably butchering how you pronounce that. Someone is going to look that up right now. What is that? What is a guffaw? But that's how I
sounds good to
that's
me.
That's how I hear it. Yeah. I did not know you had it in you because you are so serene, but then this big laugh comes out of you and it is fantastic.
Well, we had so much laughter during that weekend. It was amazing to sit around with people, most of whom I'd never met before, ever. And just common commitment to be with Jesus, to be with one another, to not be anything other than where we actually are. It was really refreshing, very refreshing.
Yes, it really was. Well, you're now people are thinking, well, I haven't heard her laugh, so I need to hear it. You've been holding back. You're holding back, but you just, it's so funny to watch you get tickled. I just thought it was the cutest thing. I was like, here's this woman who's this brilliant, she's a doctor in spiritual formation, and she's like so astute and this, I don't know, just stately and this serene, and then just this laugh comes out. It was just fun. It was just super fun. Here's something else people might find interesting about you that I actually understand in a new way, because I've had the privilege of reading your next book that is stunning. We can't really talk about it yet because it comes out this summer. We'll have you back on to talk about it, but I'm just telling you, I texted you after I read it and I said, this is a game changing book. This is an important book for the body of Christ. Here's what I want to say though. The interesting thing about you is that you love thunderstorms, like actual thunderstorms. And I realized why after I read the book, but are you a storm chaser or you just don't mind them?
I enjoy them. I do not chase them, but when they come, I enjoy them and savor them. There's just something about the out of control. It just is, and it's powerful, and it's beyond me. And then, of course, since you've read the book, you know, the memories that I have of thunderstorms as a child are so sweet to me. It's, I think, a collision of celebrating what isn't within our control, because most of the time we avoid it. Most of the time we expend a great amount of energy avoiding what's outside of our control. So storms come, You don't get to invite them. You don't get to delay them. But I have learned to enjoy them and to celebrate the power that's represented in them.
Well, that right there is a real sort of, I mean, I think kind of a plot twist, because I feel like the reason why a lot of us don't like thunderstorms is because of the actual reason that you just said you like them, which is that you enjoy the aspect of being out of control. I mean, I feel like that is something. Well, okay, let me ask it this way. Is that something that you, is just who you are, that you don't mind relinquishing that feeling of control? That feels kind of like a superhuman quality. Or is that something that you've come to over time? Because I need the secret sauce in this.
It's cultivated. And I'll share the story. And as you know, it's in the book. But when I was a little girl, I'm an only child. And my mom grew up, my mom is amazing. She's with the Lord now. And she grew up with this incredible, crippling fear of storms. I mean, like, unplug everything, don't brush your hair, go under a table, just crippling fear of storms. And my dad didn't want me to inherit that. And so daddy worked a lot. He was definitely gone every day and most weekends, but he was home at night. So this was a night tradition for us. And when we would hear a distant thunder, you know, my dad would get this anticipation in his eyes, and he would, you know, scoop me up when I was little. And when I was too big for scooping, we would walk out together and we would stand on the porch or sit on the porch, however porchy it happened to be. We moved every year. So that wasn't just one porch that, you know, graced us. Mm-hmm. Wherever we were, my dad would take me out and we would just relish the oncoming storm and the wind and the light show and the thunder. And we would stay out sometimes the whole time, depending on how big the porch was, but at least as long as we could. And so very, very, very early on, I started associating storms with an opportunity to rest with my dad. Mm. So it was relational.
Yeah.
Not transactional, not informational. It was all relational. Mm. So even to this day, my dad's been gone over 20 years. A storm, it stirs something in me of that sweet, sweet memory. It was dad's presence that made the storm safe. And so when Jesus interrupted my atheistic existence, he says, God is your father. That transferred. Mm. That's really what storms are for us. It's an opportunity to relish his safe presence. And that requires some choosing, some believing, and a whole lot of trusting that I'm working on, still working on, but I'm for the head start my dad gave me.
That was such a beautiful gift that he gave you. And he probably didn't even know the depth of what that would mean for you in your life, certainly. But I think that was some type of intuition that he had as well, to not have you carry on sort of that tradition, even that I don't know what the word I'm trying to find, but just sort of that legacy piece, that negative legacy piece, that inner, you know, that generational thing that would happen, that you would then carry that. Because so many of us have either experienced something that we've carried on from what our parents have taught, have, you know, handed down to us in a negative way, or our grandparents or whatever, or we've, praise God, been able to break those generational things. And so I love that. I want to tell you, you just got a little piece of what this book is going to be for you, and it is powerful. So that just gave you a tiny little insight. We're not going any further into it yet because we got to wait till you come back for the show, but it is available for pre-order right now. The Night is Normal, but I'm just going to tell you, buckle up and get ready, because this is just full of insights that will blow your mind. Just really, really important. And also, if you haven't listened to my show with Alicia, you want to go back and listen to the other show that we did together, because it does talk about how that she came to know Jesus out of a background of being an atheist. And I think that is such a profound piece, because you know, you arrived at this place through, you know, questions, And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that you arrived at lightly, but it's just taken hold of you so firmly. And one of the things I love about you is the depth of your confidence and belief in the Christ that you came to love. And it's lasted. And of course we know, because he's a firm foundation and it does last, he lasts. I knew I wanted to have you back on the show because your well is so deep, and this is the holidays and we're in a season that is supposed to be joyous. So many of us feel less than joyful, I think. And then I think what happens is we get into this pattern where we feel guilty for not feeling joyful when we should feel joyful, right? There's the lights and the bells and the sounds and, you know, the gifts and the parties. And I think we just, there's a kind of this pressure, and we also want it. We want to feel joyful. What do we most need right now in your view, Alicia? Do we need grace for ourselves to not be perfect in this season, or a sort of firm but loving reminder that what we're focused on maybe is causing us undue pain?
Wow. Well, yes and yes and yes, probably. I could build a bridge from the storm illustration. Storms for me have been survivable because I've viewed them as relational. And I think that the same thing transfers to every season of our life, whether that's Christmas or Easter or summer or grieving or rejoicing or opportunity or failure. These seasons that come in our life, and they are seasons because they have a beginning and they pass in time. They can be survivable if we view them relationally. The Christmas season is so incredibly complex.
Yes, yes.
Oh my word. You know, we have a prayer retreat home. And we open it up, you know, for like VRBO. And I remember one of the very first reservations that I handled myself was this beautiful woman. And we're talking on the phone. And while I'm making the reservation, she is telling me about her family. And she and her amazing beloved daughter and her daughter's husband and their little ones, you know, they used to always spend Christmas together as a family. Then when she got married, when she became a mom. And she passed away from cancer, leaving two little ones. So, you know, my heart is, I'm trying to take this information down, but I'm like, my heart is just heavy. Yeah. Spending the holidays together. And so with her son-in-law and their grandchildren. And she said, and this is a very special time because this was the time of the year that she passed. We've been spending it together ever since. And now my son-in-law is remarried. And so for the very first time, he's going to be bringing his new wife. And the complexity of the emotions she must have been experiencing were almost paralyzing for me. Now, she was wearing them with grace, but I was thinking of, you never stop grieving the loss of a child.
Right.
You know, the joy of having the grandchildren, the celebration. I mean, children and Christmas that's a pretty unbeatable combination. The honor that her son-in-law has kept such a tight relationship with them. Mixed feelings of having now a daughter-in-law, knowing that her grandchildren would be growing up, actually having more time with her than with her daughter. I mean, that is just complex. And I think that during the holidays, we need to give ourselves a permission to have an assorted variety of not necessarily complementary emotions.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's critical. We've got to give ourselves permission. There will be joy. There will be sadness. There will be frustration. There will be annoyance. There will be peace. There will be conflict. And they may all happen within the same 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Permission. I think also, at least it would help us to really remember what emotions are not.
Yeah.
Emotions, all these different feelings that we're about to have here in the next couple of weeks that we already all are having as we think of, you know, relatives coming or not coming. You know, as we think of people who used to be here but no longer are, as we think of the complexities of the arrangements, we need to remember that that emotions are not truth's vocal twin. Emotions are not truth's vocal twin. Emotions are not God. Emotions are not prophets. Emotions are really the manifestation of a whole buffet of things, from, you know, whether the sun's been shining the last couple of days or where our hormones happen to be.
Yeah.
Sleep we've had, or how frustrating a certain situation is. And I think that we tend to, at times like this, we make our emotions king. Mm. Try to shape them and manage them and mold them into something we're supposed to be feeling.
Yeah.
But the goal of the life of faith is not to be able to shape ourselves emotionally. Mm-hmm. The goal of the life of faith is to follow whatever the weather, to follow through the ups and downs, to follow through the happiness and the sadness. And so I think that it would be wise for us as we're heading in to remember what our emotions are not, and be careful to not make them our God.
Yes. That is a very important thing. And it's something I talked a lot about in The Hard Good, because, you know, it is complicated, and you do have to, if you're not willing to live in the tension of the both and, right? I like the way you said it, the assortment. then you're going to have a really difficult time, because I think they're for a lot of us, especially those of us who have a very sort of black and white way of looking at life. And certainly there are many of us who have that personality. It's almost like in many instances you think, well, I have to make a choice here. I have to make a choice. Because certainly there are some things you make a choice about. You choose to follow Christ, right? That is a choice that we have to make. There's no middle ground there. That is a clear choice. And then there is a lot of life that I think we want to lump into a one side category, this or this. And the reality is there will be times that there's something that happens in our life that it's super important for us to honor that emotion, certainly, because the Lord didn't create us as robots. He could have. We need to honor the emotion, but that doesn't mean that we need that emotion to make decisions for us. So that is a both and sort of like, yes, we honor the emotion, but also we don't allow it to lead. It's the difference between what I call an emotion being a gauge or a God, little g God in our life, right? So very, very important. One of the things that you and I talked about is that the conversations with us as human beings are centering on our exhaustion. And I think, you know, there are different factors that cause this, certainly. Some of it could be that we're forcing ourselves into a choice of either pretend that your emotions aren't real or, you know, make them the most important thing in your life. So certainly that can cause exhaustion, I think. But we are tired, I think, even spiritually in many ways. And perhaps that's because of striving. Again, could be different reasons. When you read the Bible and you know history, you see that the world has always been hard. So I think about that there were struggles there that I knew nothing about. I didn't live in those times. I guess I wonder sometimes, Alicia, you know, how good of a compass we have on if times right now are that elevated in their difficulty, or if we are at a place of sort of, I don't know, maybe inability to deal with life in a different way, and how that distinction might matter, or if it does matter.
Well, in each individual person, you know, the mix of an answer to that question would be so
sure
teaching every soul. But you know, even if we're getting as much sleep as we need, you know, water as we should, you know, even if we're either getting sunlight or taking our vitamin D, and, you know, the kind of things that we can do to give ourselves a better chance at being, feeling strong within.
Yes.
Even so, Lisa, it seems to me that something has shifted. You know, when I think about all the different amazing people I get to walk alongside of, things just seem thicker.
Yeah.
Seem heavier.
Yep.
Almost like, I don't think I would have called 3 years ago peacetime, but this sure feels like a different level of weightiness in realms that are beyond, definitely beyond my view. You know, the image that came to me the other day was how it almost feels like, you know, personally, but as I meet with people, my story is not unique, like wave upon wave upon wave upon wave upon, like there's no break, you know, one crisis is overlapping another crisis. And as I listen to my friends and those whom I'm serving, I hear the same kind of story. Something has shifted. And so, you know, we add that to a season like this. And it means we're not starting at ground, you know, we're not starting with a blank canvas here. There is something that has shifted. Things are just harder. Mm-hmm. And not in the sense of like hard first century hard, you know, we're not having to, you know, meet in a cave to say a prayer. Mm-hmm. It's not that kind of hard, but there is something that's just more difficult, which to me means the church has entered a different season of refining. Mm-hmm. Different season of having our love purified. And instead of waiting for some kind of oasis, I think that perhaps it would behoove us. Can I use a really old word?
I love behoove. I love that word.
To be asking God, how might you be refining my love for such a time as this?
That's a good question, Alicia.
And, you know, again, looping back to that, that question of all the different emotions that we have, I think part of how God refines our love is as we are honest about our emotions, but we don't let them lead the train of our lives. We think of love as an emotion. It's really more like a muscle. It's something that grows as we exercise it. And muscles don't always feel good. Occasionally, my love has this wonderful, you know, sparkle filter on it. But most of the time, it's very volitional. It's a choice. A choice to follow, a choice to be kind, a choice to be generous, a choice to be patient, a choice to have long suffering. And I think that our love has gotten a little squishy. And this season will definitely help the love in the people of God become more muscular if we see it as something to learn from instead of something to just circumvent.
Yeah. And even if we look at it as something to learn from versus endure, I think, you know, certainly endurance is what we all want. But, you know, you hear sometimes people will say, well, you know, I've just got to hang on, you know, I've just got to hang on until that day where I'll see the Lord again. And it's like, you know, you do have breath in your lungs. There's a purpose that you're here. And while I want that to sound beautiful to you, I also want you to hear that the responsibility in that, you know. And even Alicia, as you were talking, and I was thinking, you know, you said, we don't live in caves and all those kinds of things. It's true. But I also was thinking that we are very focused on, you know, our Americanized Christianity, our Western Christianity, right? And I was thinking there are Christians in parts of the world that do meet covertly. And so for them, the intensity that you're speaking of, the persecution has increased. Yes, there have always been persecuted believers as well. Let's not think this is a new thing. But the intensity, and it reminded me as you were talking, the wave upon wave, the intensity, the not letting down, it reminded me of birth pains. You know, it reminded me of my own contractions and how, you know, they would get more and more intense as the birth was getting closer. And of course, we can't predict when the Lord will return, but what we do know is that things do feel, there is an intense feeling in the air. There is an intense, and it's not like a woo-woo feeling. It's when you have conversations with people. I think what struck me the most is how it feels extremely widespread. I think what I used to experience, Alicia, was, you know, 2 out of the 5 conversations that I would have with folks would be pretty intense, or maybe even 3 out of the 5. People would be very struggling and it would be very difficult. And there would be a very, very difficult story. Now I feel like it's pretty much 5 out of 5. And the stories are so, so much more weighty and layered than I can even remember from 5 years ago.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, as you said, there are people that are giving their lives for their faith right now. There are people that are in extreme places of persecution and oppression. That is not my current story personally, But it is happening, and it would seem in an increased measure around the world. You know, one of the things that I hope shakes loose from us in this season, this wave upon wave upon wave, has been our tendency to sort of medicate ourselves with what I believe is a falsehood, Lisa, with the thought of, well, just hold on. There's something better around the corner.
Yes.
Hold on. There is some outcome around the bend that will make everything worthwhile. And there is, it's called heaven, you know,
yes,
called eternity with Jesus, but that's not what we mean. We even say this sometimes to people in the depths of despair, a woman who's had a miscarriage. Some of the things we say to people, God has another child for you. How can that possibly substitute for the pain of today? Each life has its own weight. Or if somebody loses their job, well, God has a better job for you. Or, well, you know, God is always at work for our good, yes. But is today only going to be made valuable by some future tomorrow? Is the only redeeming value of this moment's pain some outcome we can describe? Since God is present in every moment, there is something redemptive in this moment of pain. And I think that we've sometimes inadvertently started placing our hope not in God, but in that outcome. My hope isn't in, you know, God's character, that he's going to be with me today, that he is strong today, he is faithful today, he is loving today, he knows my name today, he holds me today, he is my refuge. But we've actually taken up that anchor and put it in some kind of outcome. I think that the cancer journey has in some way helped shake that loose in me. Still in process, but you know, in the cancer journey, you're constantly making these decisions. Do I do this? Do I do this? Do I stop this? Do I start this? And every once in a while, someone will say something like, well, you know, you must have done it right because you're still here. I'm still here because God's not done with me yet.
Right.
You know, each moment I try to follow the peace. Each moment I'm trying to follow Jesus, but outcome is not going to get to retroactively judge my peace. And, you know, outcome for John the Baptist was pretty grim.
Yep.
So in these moments that we have in this different age, this different time spiritually, may God help us. May he help us to just follow in the moment. And of course, there's things that we're dreaming of. There's things we're wishing for. But the outcome we can be certain of as we follow him is that we're going to follow him all the way home. Eternity with him is beyond our dreams.
You know, I think that takes pressure off. And I also know that, I mean, it is the relationship of trust that we were always supposed to have with the Lord. It, ultimately, you know, as you were talking about, people that say God has a, you know, someone for you, another husband for you, or whatever the case may be. I'm thinking to myself, it's pretty, I know that's language that we just use because we want to fill space or feel better or feel like we have a hopeful word for someone. But in reality, it's just couldn't be further from the truth to even perpetuate that idea that we could possibly know that. Those are only things that truly God knows. And so for us to even put that out there is, it's not only just can be really damaging, but I think the reason why people are adverse when they hear that is because they know that it can't be true for someone else to tell them that. It just can't possibly be true because we know that through life, that's not a guarantee that another human can give us. I was thinking also about the fact of the world and culture being outcome oriented. God is process focused in the sense of what that's going to do to our hearts and in bringing us in relationship with him. You know, I think of the word sanctification, really. Sanctification is a process, that's becoming more like Christ and thus being drawn to his heart and all those things. And I do think that about scripture that points us to the hope of heaven, which is outcome. Ultimately, it is future focused. And so how do we sort of preach that message of and hold on to that message of our best life that is to come, which we do need to be focused on, because I do feel like that provides us hope. How do we do that while understanding that the here and now can be beautiful as well?
Yes. I think that that emphasis on God's character and on the eternal promise that he has prepared a place for us and he will come back and he will bring us there is, if that is our, the main event, I think that will help loosen us from our grip on thinking that faith, its validation is based upon the here and now in the sense of what we can control and what we can count in our circumstances. You know, when we go through the Hebrews Hall of Faith, there are those that, you know, that their stories were such that we want to make movies out of. But then there's the latter half, the latter list, that still died in faith, not having received the promise. One of my great concerns for us in this day, Lisa, is I feel like we're almost setting up the next generation to decide whether or not God is good through whether or not they like their circumstances.
Yeah, for sure.
He is good come what may.
Yes.
He is God come what may. Hmm. But if we continue to have this outcome test for why this day is worth it or why following God is worth it, we are really setting up the next generation. He is who he is. And we follow him because of who he is. And we are following him, our generation has, in at least in my culture, I cannot speak for all cultures in the world, perhaps through an easier time in history than what is to come. So it's time to strengthen those knees. It's time to strengthen our arms. It's time to strengthen our faith. And to know that God is the treasure, not whether or not I can control my circumstances, that God is the treasure, whether or not I can shape my feelings into something Instagrammable, that God is the treasure, because he is with me right here. And that's a promise I can stand on, that he will waste nothing and he will be present for everything. That's what I would call faith.
That he will waste nothing and he will be present for everything. That's really, really good. I was looking online at some of the things you've said because, boy, they really hit me. And one of the things that you said is this: being present is a prerequisite to truly listening. Others, especially children, can tell when our thoughts are too loud to hear theirs. I thought, what a way to describe when we're talking to someone and we are watching their cues, their eyes, their face, whatever. And we know, oh, they're not really listening to me. Mm-hmm. Like they checked out 2 minutes ago or whatever the case may be. It's so harsh, isn't it? When we're talking to someone and they're totally checked out, but it happens. And we've done it to other people too. All of us have done this in a season where it's so easy to be distracted. How do we stay present in our lives and for other people and even in conversations? Do you have any advice for us with that?
Well, with a house full of teenagers, I might have some thoughts. I don't know if we easily apply. I think we have set ourselves up for distraction. We've got something in our ear that we're listening to. We've got something in our hand that we're scrolling to. I think that a simplification of what input we're receiving will help us focus. We don't need, we don't need five different things going and streaming at once. I think having some almost fast time, even as a family, no phones at the table, or these opportunities where we are decreasing the amount of input so that we can just focus on each other's face, in each other's eyes, each other's heart. For me, it's requiring a lot of choice, a lot of decision, and some rules that aren't very popular in my house.
Yes.
Because otherwise I feel like we're giving each other leftovers of our attention. And perhaps it's just me. Perhaps it's just what I see, but it's like, we don't know how to be bored with each other anymore.
That's totally true. and awkward with each other in a way.
We don't know. Yeah, I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not studying how all of these trends are affecting, you know, the developing brain, but I can see what I can see. And we don't know how to just kick back and be bored. We don't know how to communicate through the simplicity of our presence. You are valuable without having to say anything. You are valuable without having to post anything. I honor you just by the value of my undistracted presence. That's a healing gift. People just want to be with you because they value you. And so we've, in our distraction, we were removing from us a core ingredient of actual healing community. And I'm finding that it's not volunteering itself back. I'm having to take it back.
That's very, very true. You know, as you were talking, I thought, I feel very loved when I'm at lunch with someone and they don't put their phone on the table, but it stays in their purse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, that's small, but it lets me know, oh, they're in with me for an hour. And I mean, that convicts me because I know that there have been times when I've been at lunch with people that I haven't done that. I've put the phone on the table. And look, we all have emergencies, right? But there used to be emergencies without phones. I can remember the day when we didn't have phones. I'm old enough to remember that. And miraculously, we made it through lunches without being interrupted with the emergency. I mean, you know, I do think this is so valuable. I also was thinking about the fact that as our brains, I'm not a neuroscientist either, far from it, probably a lot farther than you from it. I can tell you that right now because you're a smart cookie. But what I can tell you is that I would imagine that the more that we have stretched our capacity to multitask all the technology, now it's almost like we've stretched ourselves out of I don't even know what I'm saying. You know how, like, if you put on a sock and you stretch it out of its natural form, how that sock is never, it's like it'll never go back in that natural form, and then it always fits a little wonky. That's how I think about this. It's a very weird illustration, but I think about the fact that now we've created this sort of ability that we feel is a need to multitask three streaming devices. We don't know how to handle just one streaming device anymore because that sock has gotten out of its mold. And so now that sock feels weird now. Is that the weirdest illustration you've ever heard in your life?
Very accurate. And it also loops back to where we started this season. Oh my word. So now we have how many people in our house with how many different streaming devices and how many different distractions. And we wonder why we don't feel relationally nourished.
Yeah.
Things have changed. I was sitting with a bunch of next gen not that long ago. We were playing a game of, I have no idea, it was Uno or something like that. And, you know, Uno goes pretty fast. But in between
right.
people's play, they were picking up their phone. You know, so it's like, reverse, pick up your phone. You know, plus,
yes,
pick up your phone. I thought, oh my word, this is the day. And I'm tempted to do the same. So
because you're bored between your hands.
Or we don't know what to do. We don't know what to do without having this constant stimulus in our eyes, in our brain, in our hand, our fingers. We have got to reclaim. We must.
Yes.
And even if we take my poor kids, we have a screen-free week every year. They just think they're going to die, you know, but at the end of the day, Mom, we need to do this every year.
Yes.
Because there's something we rediscover. So maybe, you know, screen-free afternoons, or even just by, you know, my own example, you know, of not bringing my phone into the kitchen, or somehow we are going to have to be very aggressive in claiming our mind to simply be present and give each other the healing gift of attention.
Mm.
My guess is that as we do that more, that some of the anxiety we feel around the holiday will decrease. Because when we're so incredibly busy with all this stimulus, it's like we're chasing the wind. What would success be? You know, I don't even think we know what it is, but suddenly we see one another and we're able to touch one another. There's something that's transmitted there of healing and of the community that God longs for us to be. So being present, we're going to have to take it by force.
Well, I think we forget about nature. We forget about breathing. We forget about moving our bodies. We forget about the taste of food. It's like, honestly, this sounds extreme, but it's like we turn robotic. We do. We turn robotic in our relationships and in all the things that God's created. And I love what you're saying. You're saying we got to take it by force. Why would we think that, you know, we can just be casual about reclaiming these spaces in our life when there is a constant aggression coming towards us to take those things from us? We're going to have to meet it or exceed it with the same level of passion and intention, you know, motivation to take that back. And if we care about our families and our own health and mental health and all of those things, that we'll do it. So I hope that what you hear us saying is, listen, this is December, but you can reclaim going into this next year. It can look different. I think sometimes too, Alicia, we feel like, oh, we're just going with the stream. We're just, you know, we're a victim to all this technology these days. And that's not true. You have fingers and you have the abilities to hold, you have the ability in your hand to turn something off, you know, you have the ability to, you have minds to be able to say no, mouths to be able to say no to something. And we are not victims to anything. With the help of the Holy Spirit, we can refuse. And we need to exercise that far more often. I also think it was a very good word to say, you know, your kids are going to resist you on this because they are acclimated, because they have the pressure of their peers with this. But in the end, they will see the value. And it will take a little bit of detox time, but stick with it and it will benefit everyone. So hear us saying that this is a really important thing to do. And it's motivating me also in a new way. One of the things that I really love is the way that you talk about you and Jesus. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was traveling, it was about 10 years ago, and I was in a particularly weary season of travel. And I also didn't like it very much, to be honest with you. I thought, I don't really like doing this. I was traveling alone and I didn't have an assistant with me. And I remember I was going into a hotel room for what seemed like the millionth time, rolling a suitcase in that room. And this wave of loneliness came over me. And I don't feel lonely very often, to be honest. I'm a pretty independent person. And I remember the Lord speaking to me saying, I have rolled every suitcase into every hotel room with you on every single speaking engagement.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, you know, Jesus, I might cry. Mm-hmm. Jesus has been the only person who has seen every single inside of every building that I have proclaimed the name of Jesus in. He has seen every airport I've flown into, every venue that I've been driven to, every remote place that I've spoken, that some of them didn't even know how to spell my name. Every place that I've served with my hands and the stories that I've heard that have marked my heart indelibly. And it's only just been me and Jesus, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. And that's the key to peace of mind. We're searching for a lot of keys, but we keep searching over Jesus' shoulder for them. The fact that he is with us constantly and attentive to us. He is not distracted. He's not streaming three devices.
Yeah.
It's just you. He has this, well, because he's God, he is absolutely present to you in every single moment, to me in every single moment. And so when his presence becomes the greatest treasure, boy, the rest is a whole lot more manageable. I think with Jesus has been the strongest, most life-shaping discipline of my whole spiritual life, knowing that he is with me and that faith is about being attentive to him in each moment, of living each moment with him, not just for him, but with him. Whether it's, you know, amazing moments like getting to be with Lisa on a podcast, whether it's, you know, less than amazing moments about picking up a gift our dog left for us. You know, Jesus is with us. That is the treasure of life. So whatever we need to do to be more present to him is going to overflow and help us be more present to one another. Maybe that's the real gift we can give this Christmas.
Emmanuel, God with us. I was thinking about that.
Yes.
Wow.
Present of presence. If we are attentive to how he has given it to us, we will be more equipped to give that to one another.
Yes. Fill in this blank for me. Right now, life feels what?
Intense. Extra. Mm-hmm. A battle zone.
Well, I also appreciate about you, your honesty. And, you know, I think sometimes we're afraid to say what is actually true. Well, it feels extra. It feels hard, especially if we're in a place that we think people are looking to us to somehow be above the moment. And it's like, we are all humans that are dealing with something in life. You know, with your pastor's dealing with something difficult, your neighbor, your mother, your best friend who smiles and serves, all of us, the most popular kid at school that you think has no worries, the beauty queen, the, you know, the famous star of movies, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, we're a human. This is how we all are going through life. And the Lord is our help and hope. And so we don't have to be afraid to say, well, the truth is life is intense right now and I need God.
Yes. And when I think about some of the questions we began with, Lisa, you know, the Christmas holidays, maybe success this Christmas isn't the perfect dinner and that everybody gets along and that there aren't any arguments and that somehow you pulled off the best of the best. You know, we keep raising the bar so high we can't reach it. Maybe success this Christmas holiday is to simply be more present to Jesus in the midst of the mess.
I love that.
Set our hearts to. We can decrease our distractions. We can choose to not let tomorrow's outcome measure today's obedience. We can give the gift of presence to Jesus and through Jesus to each other. Perhaps our metrics for evaluating the holidays need to be edited.
That's so good. Well, friend, I have one last question. I ask it of every single guest. I asked you last time, I'm going to ask you again. What is the last thing that you would say about Jesus if you could only say one more thing?
That he calls you beloved. And he means it.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, friend.
You've been listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. Follow us on Instagram. Subscribe to us wherever you get podcasts. Jesus Over Everything is a production of Joe Productions. Executive producer Lisa Whittle. Produced and edited by Lainey Thomas. Art by Noelle Rhodes. Have you read my latest book, The Hard Good? Did you know there is a 6-week Bible study that goes with it? Check out both of these resources and grab a free audio chapter on my website at lisawhittle.com.